sit here on my own and I'm over it. I pack my kids, my clothes, my heart into my automobile for a brand new stop and I'm over it.
All right, welcome to North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and, well, it's the holiday season. How you doing, Coach?
I'm well, Rick. Thank you.
Good, good. Good Thanksgiving, I hope.
Very nice with the family as usual. Always a good time.
Excellent, excellent. Well, we got a really special first half hour here tonight. Not that the other boys aren't special when we talk to them, too, but we've got the assistant general manager and the vice president of the Philadelphia Flyers coming up for this half hour, Barry Hanrahan. And Barry, of course, a graduate of Gloucester High School. I was lucky to have Barry in class back in math class when I was teaching. And he is an amazing interview, Tim, and just a great all-around guy. We're going to talk with Barry about the Flyers, about the organizations, and about his special interaction with Paul Holmgren, who's going to be inducted into the United States Hockey Hall of Fame next week. He was inducted into the Philadelphia Flyers Hall of Fame recently. And Paul Holmgren is to the Flyers, I don't think I'm exaggerating when I say he is to the Flyers probably what Red Auerbach was to the Celtics in terms of being a legend. Not a coach, of course, necessarily. But Paul Holmgren, just every aspect of the Flyers is part of his resume. We'll also talk with Gary Larrabee later on. He's got some stuff on golf. Mike Grenier will be checking in with the 500 Celtics once again for the second, third, or fourth year in a row. And we'll talk a little football as high school Super Bowls are underway this week. And sadly, we won't be doing any live broadcasts this year. Hopefully, we'll get back on the horse next year. But three North Shore schools, two from the Northeastern Conference, one from the Cape Ann League, still in the mix for a state championship. So all of that. And Tim, the Patriots looked pretty darn good in that second half yesterday.
Yeah, they did. You know, it seems to be their modus operandi is stumble a little bit in the early going and then all of a sudden figure it out. And the second half, they just dominated. But that's where they've always been. You know, and the local scribes, national scribes, the talking heads on TV have always talked about the Patriots' ability to make halftime adjustments, that there's nobody better at making halftime adjustments than Bill Belichick. And another example was yesterday. You know, they came out yesterday and just, dominated that second half and just took it to a slightly undermanned Titans, but still a very formidable football team under Mike Vrabel. And they just put the pedal to the metal and wouldn't let go.
Yeah, and it was fun to watch that second half, and of course, everybody looked good. You know, they gave up a lot of yardage on defense, but man, they made the plays when they had to, and it's funny, they didn't let Tannehill get untracked at all, so the other guys racked up a lot of yardage between 20s, but that was about it.
Well, you know, I made that comment on Twitter last night. Someone mentioned, some guy 250 yards, but I said, yeah. I said, run for 250 yards between the 20s. You don't win many games.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing,
they'll let you run between the 20s. They'll let you pass between the 20s, and then they play that clamp down defense, and you get maybe you get 3 points.
Well, that's one thing of concern. The one thing of concern from yesterday was the 3 points for the Patriots. They well could have had 50 if they could. Could have cashed in the red zone and so on. But it was a good day. And, you know, you mentioned they were undermanned, and the big test is next week. We'll talk more about that later on. But I want to take a break, Tim, and see if I can get a hold of Mr. Hanrahan here a little bit early. I hope he'll answer, as I'm looking forward to chatting with him about so much with respect to the Flyers and the National Hockey League. And, again, just so thrilled that he has maintained his Gloucester roots by reaching out to people and always welcoming people in his circle. So it's really way cool to be doing this and to take the time to talk with us too. As a matter of fact, let's not forget about that. Let me take a break, Tim, and welcome back. This is North Shore Sports Night on a Monday night. We'll be back.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we're back live now with Vice President and Assistant General Manager of the Philadelphia Flyers, Mr. Barry Hanrahan. And Barry, once again, thank you for taking the time to talk with us tonight. So much to talk about, so many questions, so little time, but we really appreciate your being with us.
Well, thank you, and again, it's always a pleasure to come on the show, so I appreciate you having me.
All right, again, so much to talk to. If anybody doesn't know, Barry Hanrahan is the Vice President, Assistant General Manager of the Philadelphia Flyers. He's done probably every single job that that organization has. He's worked his way up from college. Right on. And I'm looking at the bio on the Flyers website, and you have an Australian cobber dog. What is that right? What the heck is an Australian?
Yeah.
What is that?
He's a fancy labradoodle.
Okay. All right. And we've talked with Barry in the past about what it takes for high school kids to reach their dreams and so on. But tonight we're going to take a different tack because, first of all, it's a very special week for Philadelphia Flyers fans with the local introduction into the Flyers Hall of Fame, but also the United States Hockey Hall of Fame coming up next week. And I want to get to that with Barry in just a few minutes. But Barry, first I want to just mention that looking at the standings, to see the Bruins and the Flyers both hovering around 500 is a little disconcerting, and I know it's not going to stay that way the rest of the year.
No, we certainly hope not. I mean, first thing, it's very difficult to win in the National Hockey League. What the salary cap era has taught us, that parity is here, and it's here to stay. It's a very competitive league, and if you're not playing with a full deck of healthy players, each and every game's a challenge, whether you're healthy or not. And we've had a bit of the injury bug. I know other teams have as well. So you just have to prepare and grind it out and be ready for your next game. But it's been a battle. We're 1/4 of the season passed already. We're at the 20 game mark. But the schedule's been a little challenging as well because being an Olympic year, they've added a few more games to the schedule that you might not have seen in November or early December. We're in a stretch where we're playing 5 and 7 coming up, 5 games, 7 days.
Wow.
We would have had a 6 and 9, but we have tomorrow night's game postponed with the Islanders due to a COVID situation on their club. But no, every game's a challenge. We certainly hope to catch a break here with getting some guys healthy and really play with a full team, something we haven't done all but one game all season.
Yeah, that puts a crimp in the plans, yeah, for sure. We as fans know that with the local teams when they have injuries or the COVID sicknesses and so on. But that leads me, if I could ask you about the relationship between the National Hockey League and each individual team, because, you know, you mentioned scheduling and packing all those games into the early part of the season. So what is the relationship between an individual team, its ownership, its management, and the NHL in general? If I can ask, I know that's a broad question, but, you know, I'm just trying to ask who runs the show here.
Well, the structure of a sports team has grown so much over the years. You can go back 20, 30 years where you may have had a staff of maybe 30 to 40, maybe 50 people on your entire operation. Now we're having that alone in hockey ops alone. So it's a little bit more of a wide range staff. So each department deals with league counterparts on their own issues.
Mm.
I work with Chuck Fletcher, president of hockey ops and general manager of the Flyers, and he and I are our direct contacts for all hockey related matters with the National Hockey League, and deal with things, whether it's the scheduling, whether it's following the protocols that were in place during the bubble a year and a half ago to last season's 56 game schedule with the regularity of testing that we had throughout the season to where we are today with it being a little bit less. We're still testing 3 days a week, but there's still a lot of rules and protocols in place that we have to follow. And that's all on top of everything else that we have to maintain with the collective bargaining agreement, being roster compliant, salary cap compliant, and all the other fun stuff that goes into fielding the team for each and every game.
Yeah, I'm just, my head is spinning. I can't even imagine, really, seriously, all the implications and legal stuff. And do you still handle contracts too?
I do. I work with Chuck in negotiating player contracts and filing them with the league. And then on top of that, as far as our staff goes and, employment contracts that will include our coaches and other members of our hockey operations staff.
Good heavens. All right, now what about the relationship? Maybe that's the wrong question to ask, but the Flyers' experience at the Wells Fargo is amazing. And for the casual hockey fan, for the person who's never been there, or for the diehards, it's got everything in that building during a Flyers game. And how much, if at all, are you involved in that experience? And how does that work? What's the logistics of that program?
The game presentation and the fan experience falls under our business operations.
Mm-hmm.
We're not directly involved with that from the hockey side, but we are familiar with it because some of the things that they'll integrate on a game-by-game basis may involve some of us in hockey ops, or it may involve some initiatives we're trying to promote from the hockey side. So we are aware of what's going on. But they spend a lot of time. We have small staffs within the staff of the marketing, game presentation, entertainment side. And then, you have your staff that oversees your fan base, and it might be the casual fan who buys a small ticket package or might buy game-to-game tickets. And then, you know, much like in Boston, and the Flyers have been around for quite a long time, we have outstanding fan base here where we have season ticket holders that date back to the late 60s.
Yeah, I'm aware of that. Yeah.
So,
yep.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So it goes into a lot of it, it's more of, how can you entertain the fan, and what needs can you provide? And that's become more relevant in the last 18 months or so, close to 2 years since the pandemic kicked in February or early March of 2020. The game experience has certainly changed.
Mm-hmm.
So you're accommodating a lot of needs. At the same time, you're still trying to follow local and state guidelines of what can and can't be done in terms of attending live sporting events. So certainly they have their hands full, but they at the end of the day, they try to provide a nice experience for the fans. The one thing they can't control is what happens on the ice. That's where we come in, and we try to make sure we have a team that gives a solid effort and gives fans a nice experience.
From that perspective, what's been the effect on the play of the Flyers and the National Hockey League with respect to COVID?
Well, obviously last year was a condensed season of 56 games. We got off to a tremendous start. We were, I think, tops in our division. We went into Washington on Super Bowl Sunday and beat the Capitals and felt pretty good about ourselves, and then all of a sudden a couple tests came back positive. At that time, the players were testing, including our staff. We were testing every single day. With players that are now vaccinated and staff that's vaccinated, we're at every 3 days is where we're at in this season. But last year, for instance, we got hit with Washington. I think over a 3 to 4 day period, we ended up having about 8 players come down with the COVID-19 virus, and really turned our whole season around. We've never really rebounded from that.
Uh-huh.
We went through a stretch of about, well, the players had to be isolated and quarantined for up to 14 days. We went through that stretch where, you know, we had to call up several players from the minor leagues, fielding a team that probably had about a third of our roster of minor league players, including the outdoor game against Boston and Tahoe, which was a fantastic setting, a beautiful environment, but they got the best of us that day for sure. But so we never really rebounded from that and struggled all year. This year, I believe the league had, you know, close to 98% of all players were vaccinated. It might have been 95 to 98 in that range. We've seen two sets of postponements so far. Ottawa had something about, earlier this month here in November where they postponed three games, and then the Islanders were having a hard time fielding a lineup last week and actually postponed games this week that included last night mm-hmm. against the Rangers and our game against them in Philadelphia tomorrow night. So, you know, we are seeing a little bit of, you know, cases still around there, but, you know, it's how we manage it going forward is mm-hmm. going to be the best thing for the league.
I want to get to the Hall of Fame experience in a minute, but I've been monopolizing this conversation. Tim, are you there? Sorry about that, brother.
Hello, Rick?
Hello, yeah, go ahead.
Nice to hear your voice, yeah. Okay, I have a quick question, a little bit aside. I just saw Brad Marchand was suspended for three games for slew footing. Could you explain that for the casual hockey fans?
Well, I didn't actually see the infraction, but it's usually a case where a player will come in from behind and catch another player, you know, taking his skates out from under him, per se,
mm-hmm.
Where it can be a very dangerous play, especially you're not expecting it. I mean, there is contact. You might get hit body to body, but when someone comes from behind you and essentially trips you or pulls your feet out from under you, it can be extremely dangerous for the player. It's a penalty in the game. More times than not, occasionally it could get missed, and that happens. But more times than not, it will be subject to supplemental discipline if it's an infraction where that could cause injury or be a dangerous hit. I can't comment on this one just because I didn't see the infraction.
Yeah, I was more or less kind of trying to figure out just what slew footing was. Okay, I was looking at your transaction record, and doesn't seem to be overly busy, but there's one guy that stands out. He must be on a pretty regular phone call basis with this guy, Nick Seeler.
Yes.
He's been up and down more times than I've been on elevators.
There you go. That's exactly it. Nick's been a pleasant surprise for us in training camp. And as camp opened, one of the players we had on our club last year that we thought would be in that sixth, seventh defenseman role had a surgery late in the summer, early training camp. So it opened up a spot for Nick. He's been going back and forth as we manage the salary cap because we were tied up against it to start the year. We had it was about three or four players that were on our salary cap who were injured, and that impacts everything. And a lot of teams who are, you know, pushing the upper limit, it's been a challenge because the cap didn't go up this year. It stayed flat at the 81.5. So that's been a challenge. So when Nick's gone back and forth on our off days or days when we didn't necessarily need him in the lineup, it's more or less of managing the salary cap and trying to make sure we're maximizing days for when we could use those cap dollars later on in the season.
All right. I want to turn it over now to the Hall of Fame stuff, Barry, because many times when we've talked in the past, you've mentioned Paul Holmgren, and I don't think Boston fans are aware of the legacy of him and the fact that he will be inducted to the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame next week, and you're going to be there. So give me a comment on Mr. Holmgren, please.
Well, Paul's someone, in my first day of work with the Flyers back in 1997, I come in, and he just took me right under his wing and has been a mentor of mine since that day. You had mentioned some things I have, you know, been able to accomplish in the Flyer organization. My resume doesn't come anywhere close to his. He has done everything that's been asked of anybody who can come through a Flyer organization or any hockey organization for that matter, over the last 40 years, from being a player to being an assistant coach to being a head coach to being an assistant GM, a director of player personnel. general manager, and then, finished his career as president of business operations. So he was the president of the Flyers. He served so many roles. He's impacted so many lives and really guided a lot of careers for a lot of us on both the hockey side and the business side. His U.S. hockey contributions go back just as long. I mean, he came up in Minnesota. I remember him telling me stories back in the day. Paul's a big, strong man, but he was a dual-sport athlete. He might have been a three- or four-sport athlete, knowing him, but he played high school football and basketball, and he ended up playing hockey and football. I apologize. And he ended up going to the University of Minnesota, but he said when he did his college tours, he went to Ohio State, and Woody Hayes told him he could come play football for them and play hockey. So just tells you a little bit about the athlete that Paul was. But he, through just all the U.S. programs and then playing in world championships over the years and then becoming part of their coaching staff and their managerial teams, he's managed world championship entries for the United States. He was an assistant coach on the probably the second greatest feat of USA hockey. It was the 1996 World Cup when they went into Montreal and beat Canada in the third game there the Forum, but it's whatever it's called today, the Bell Center.
Right, right.
So they beat Canada with a team full of Hall of Famers and Gretzky and Lemieux and Messier and Yzerman, that whole group. He was an assistant coach on that team, and then he has served in multiple roles over the years, putting together Olympic teams and world championship teams as well. So it's a very well-deserved. It'll be an honor to be there. I've been fortunate to go to a couple of these at USA Hockey, and it'll be a real treat to see not only a mentor of mine, as I said, but also a real good friend.
You know, I have to ask you about that, because hockey players, the professional hockey players that I've met in the area, in the Boston area, are tough as nails on the ice, and of course, Paul Holmgren, his reputation is as tough as it gets on the ice. But the people I've talked with off the ice, whether they're hockey coaches, high school hockey coaches, or just people you run into, and people who know former NHLers, all of these guys, all of them are gentlemen off the ice and nice people. And I'm guessing for Paul Holmgren to have succeeded so well in the business world, he's got to be a pretty decent guy off the ice.
It most certainly is. I mean, you mentioned the toughness of the man, and he is one tough man. And he played the game when the game was at its toughest level. I mean, you don't have to go back to pulling up YouTube, and I'm sure the people in that area can remember the games on Channel 38.
Oh, yeah.
And, he and Terry O'Reilly have their days, and whether it was John Wensink. And he used to tell me, he said, if we go into Boston, and you know, the old Boston Garden was, of course, a lot smaller than the standard rinks are today, but he said we'd go into Boston and play those matinee games, the Saturday afternoon games at 1 o'clock, and you could hardly sleep the night before because of the lineup the Bruins would have, and you knew it wasn't going to be an out type of afternoon. It was going to be one of those 3 to 4 hour games dealing with, you know, the likes of O'Reilly and Stan Johnson and Wensink and the whole crew. But the Flyers, They weren't intimidated. They were built the same way and had, tough players like Paul and Ben Wilson and that crew they had there in Philadelphia.
Fantastic. It's just, unbelievable stuff. And I'm really happy that, you're going to be able to, go down there. Actually, it's out in Denver, right?
It is. It's in Denver. Yeah.
Okay.
So, it'll be a nice trip out. And, it's actually nice. Peter McNabb, the old Bruin.
Oh, yeah.
His name with Paul.
Yep.
And the longtime writer and media personnel, Stan Fischler.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of it, because of the COVID postponement last year, the 2020 class will be there as well, which will include Tony Granato and Boston College coach Jerry York. So
it'll
be a real nice evening celebrating the greatness of USA Hockey.
All right, before I wrap it up with you, Barry, I'm going to give Tim one last chance to come in here instead of dominating the conversation. Tim.
I've just enjoyed listening to you dull the tone, Rick, really.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. Coach, Barry, I guess for me, what is the biggest distinction between in the two roles that you play as vice president and then assistant GM is I mean, obviously, I think the GM deals more with the players directly. But as the vice president, how is that different?
I think just more, it's added a little more responsibility. Also means I've been there a long time. more importantly, it's more of, you know, I'm there to assist Chuck in the day-to-day operation of the hockey side, but I'm also, you know, work closely with our business operations and our ownership group on any matters that come up, and work through with Chuck. And that includes budgeting. That includes, you know, anything that might come up from a game presentation standpoint, you know, working, you know, with building out our staff and doing things from an administration standpoint.
All right. My final comment, Barry, is, I want any youngsters listening to remember what you once told me about any job you get when you're trying to work your way up, whatever it is, do the best you can. And the other thing I want to mention to you is how impressed I am, not only with your accomplishments, but also your demeanor, because, I've been lucky enough to be in the building where you talk with people from the top floor down to the basement, and everybody respects you, knows you, and you know everybody by your first name. And I just think that that's a rarity. And, I just, you know, all of us here in Gloucester, and I mean everybody. Tim was talking about, my smile gets big. Every time I mention your name in Gloucester, it's the same smile from everybody else. So thank you so much for your time. And if the Bruins can't win the cup, I sure hope the Flyers do.
Well, I appreciate the kind words. And again, I always enjoy coming on and talking hockey. And, just, it's always a treat for me. So I really appreciate the kind words. I appreciate the opportunity. And also, yeah, if it's not going to work Boston's way, hopefully, the folks up there will be rooting for the black.
There you go. There you,
black and gold.
There you go. You got it. All right, Barry, have a wonderful holiday season. Be well.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you, sir.
All right.
Bye bye.
Thanks, Tim. Thanks, Rick.
That is Barry Hanrahan, who is, I am blown away by this, Tim. I'm telling you, I'm just in awe of the man. He's the, vice president and assistant general manager of the Philadelphia Flyers. And at one time, he was, in my Algebra 2 class as a hockey skater and, hockey player. And Timmy hasn't changed. It's just amazing, except he's so accomplished and so brilliant.
Hey, from Algebra 2 to $1 million contract. Not bad.
Oh man, I'm telling you. No, it's amazing. And you hear, the other thing is he's worked his way up. He was, you know, an assistant to Phil, Esposito when the Lightning were just getting started. And then, he's worked his way up. He's continued to get educated. He's majored in sports management. I'm going to post his bio up on our post tonight. And, he also went and got a law degree to negotiate. He was once negotiating the, non-North American contracts, but you heard how broad a knowledge base he has. And Tim, I didn't know anything about how hockey works except watching the games. You know what I'm saying?
Most of us don't. You know, we don't see the behind the scenes, the day to day of these operations. You know, when I was going to the high school media day, they would often take us a little tour of the Gillette, and we'd go through the offices, and you go into this maze of rooms and all these little cubby holes, and you're wondering, I wonder what these people do. Then you go to another, and there's a whole other section of cubicles. You're like, oh, I wonder what these people do, and you have no clue.
Right.
But they're all in their cubicles doing their job.
It's amazing, and I'm so appreciative to Barry, and sorry about dominating, man. I get all carried away.
Oh, no. I thought you did a great job. You had great questions. You gave the time. You gave them. I was very proud of you.
Good. All right. I'll get one of those little bluebird stars like I used to get in first grade reading. Okay. Let's take a break. We'll come back with Gary Larrabee. This is North Shore Sports Night on this Monday night. We'll be right back.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Okay, we are back now with the great Gary Larrabee, golf writer, sports historian, and generally a good guy all overall. Gary, welcome back. I trust you had a nice Thanksgiving holiday. I certainly hope you did.
Wonderful, quiet, peaceful. Thank you for asking.
All right, that's good. I don't know about you guys, but I was just so thrilled that we actually had Thanksgiving this year. Last year, you know, we had a very small dinner with just my daughter. I couldn't see my son, who was living somewhere else. I couldn't see my grandchildren. So I was just thrilled. I would have had a tuna fish sandwich on Thursday and been really happy.
I'm pleased to hear that, and I think we all were in the same frame of mind, and great to be back to some form of normalcy. Not sure how long it's going to last, Rick. But I know it was a very good Thanksgiving weekend for Brooks Koepka. Do you agree, Tim?
Oh yeah. I've been looking at the article. I just wanted to thank you. You gotta love it. He beat the four. Now, why did they only play a 12-hole match?
But that was for TV, as well as the fact they were playing out in Las Vegas at the Wynn Golf Club, which you may or may not know is actually a very strong regulation 18-hole golf course built directly behind the main thoroughfare in Las Vegas, right behind where all the casinos are. A very unique piece of land, a square piece of land. And that was part sponsor issues, part timing issues, and the guys didn't want to play 18 holes. They wanted to play 12 holes, and it turned out fine. Koepka won 4 and 3.
I know.
And although there was some...
That's a butt kicking.
It is for only 12 holes. You only played 9. Hey, when I turned it on, it was already over. It was on two different stations, and I turned it on too late to see the live action, but saw the highlights, and Koepka and DeChambeau were pretty much on their very best behavior. A few good laughs between them, a few snips, mainly by DeChambeau. But it was a very good show, and of course the stars of the show were Phil Mickelson and Charles Barkley, who were doing the commentary.
Oh, no.
That had to be spread.
Charles Barkley on golf?
Yes, and people like to listen to him talk, and he does play a lot of golf. He's a golf nut. So it was good to have a little bit of the silliness as well as the very acerbic commentary of Phil. Phil's going to be, if he wants to do it, he'll make a gazillion dollars working. I think he's going to probably succeed Faldo, Nick Faldo, in being the CBS analyst alongside Jim Nance. He's going to make a lot of money talking about golf when he decides to retire, which may not be for 5 or 10 more years, guys, but when the time comes, he will be a much big improvement on Nick Faldo.
Gary, didn't Barkley jump into the feud between Koepka and the DeChambeau when it was heating up?
He may have. I wasn't aware of that, Tim, but it turned out to be a good show, and a very good show for the way Barkley and Mickelson presented it. A lot of laughs, lots of snippets and snide remarks in between the two of them, and either DeChambeau or Koepka. And Koepka got the better of DeChambeau, and I'm sure they're going to do it again next year.
Oh yeah, you know that's almost made for TV. You know, okay, you know, can DeChambeau come back? You know, can Koepka do it again? You know, the big buildup.
And they both behaved themselves very well, I guess, during the Ryder Cup, and of course the U.S. team blew away the European team. But moving right along, gentlemen, if you will allow me, and we'll talk a little bit about the fascinating nature of the game of golf, and nowhere was that better exemplified recently, guys, than when our own Rob Oppenheim played in the TaylorMade Pebble Beach Invitational out in the Monterey Peninsula a few weeks ago. Since we spoke last,
mm-hmm.
He didn't play too badly. He shot 6 under 282, finishing like 22nd, nothing great. But he made a few bucks. It was a nice trip for him, and I think all expenses were paid by TaylorMade and Pebble Beach. It was an event that involved LPGA players, PGA Tour players, Champions Tour players, and a bunch of amateur teams, and Rob did okay. But the interesting thing, guys, was the fact the very first round Rob played at Pebble Beach, I should say it's at the links of Spanish Bay. The very first round of the tournament, Rob made birdies on his first six holes, seven of his first eight holes, Tim. So he was seven under after eight holes. He shoots 28 on the front. He's thinking about probably breaking 60. And then he shoots 40 on the back and has to settle for a 68. What a way, what a wild game golf truly is.
Yeah, he can never count on things staying exactly as they are a lot of the time.
Perfect example, though, of you just never know what's going to happen on the golf course, whether it's DeChambeau, Koepka, or Rob Oppenheim. But Rob's still playing. He'll now take a little bit of a breather before the Corn Ferry Tour kicks back in there early in next year. I think the first tournament's in the Bahamas. He'll be there as he tries to regain his PGA Tour card again. But one other item, I think, guys, it's well worth sharing with our listeners tonight, is what the amazing Ron Kirby, Beverly-born, Beverly-raised, Beverly High School, United Shoe Country Club, where his dad, Paul Kirby, was an assistant pro before heading up to New Hampshire for the rest of his club professional career. You know, you guys know, I think I've told you before, Ron Kirby designed Old Head over in Ireland, one of the most famous golf courses in the world these days. But now he's 88 years old, Rick and Tim, and he is still working nicely out of his, he lives in West Palm Beach, Florida. He's very good friends with Jack Nicklaus and Gary Player. Ron is working on a golf course called Apes Hill, like the ape, gorillas, I guess, and chimpanzees are apes. It's called Apes Hill. It's in Barbados, a very, very nice place to have a golf course project. And Ron's been getting national acclaim in the golf publications in the last 6 months or so, because he has restored and rehabilitated the entire 18 hole at the resort course, and he's continuing to work on it. He's also going to be putting together a 9-hole short course, and that short course is going to include holes he's going to try to replicate the famous 7th, the downhill par 3 7th at Pebble Beach, the 12th and 16th holes, the par 3s at Augusta. We sure know what those holes are all like, as well as the 18th hole at the old course at St. Andrews.
Wow, what a great idea.
As well as number 10 at Pine Valley. So it's a wonderful project for Ron. 88 years old, guys, still doing it. Still showing his remarkable talents as in golf course design. And he still goes over to Ireland a few times a year. They're always tweaking Old Head. And if you don't know, Rick, about Old Head, it's the golf course is located and just barely was able to be fit on a promontory off of Kinsale in southwestern Ireland, where the entire surroundings of the golf course are 200-foot cliffs that tumble down into the ocean.
I've been in that region, but I haven't been to that course, yeah.
Google it. You'll be blown away by the photography. Anyways, that's what Ron Kirby from Beverly's doing. I'm beginning a campaign to get him inducted into the next class of the Massachusetts Golf Hall of Fame. Will probably be in 2 years, 2023. And there are so many reasons for Ron to be inducted. A Beverly boy who made good. He got Gary Player started in golf course design, and since that time, Player has done over 200 courses. Ron has done courses in South Africa, New Zealand, the Philippines, many in Europe, a lot of them in Ireland, as well as several in America. But we're going to get him in the Massachusetts Golf Hall of Fame if I have anything to say about it.
Wow, that's cool. What a great story. Way cool.
Gary, you have the other major story in the golf world was the passing of Lee Elder, the first black to play at Augusta in the 70s.
I haven't seen that. When did that happen, Tim?
Yesterday or today.
Well, that may be why I haven't seen it yet, but thanks for the heads up. Yes, Lee Elder is, you know, one of the great men who promoted black golf. Wasn't he the first black professional to play at the Masters?
Yes, he was.
Because Sifford, Charlie, the great Charlie Sifford, never got that chance. Well, thanks for bringing that to my attention. That's a very good headline. I wasn't aware of it.
1975 at Augusta.
And he was wonderful on the Champions Tour as well. We saw him a lot of times at Shattuck out in Concord. And serious, but with a very biting and very dry sense of humor, and a great name that helped, hopefully carried American golf to some of the young black men and women, or teenagers, if you will, in America, to get them playing golf. And Lee set a great example for all of them.
All right, Gary, are you doing a column right now, or is that has to wait till springtime?
No more columns, but I'm dreaming up a lot of them for next year already.
That's all right. Okay. That's cool. All right. Go Patriots and enjoy. Well, Monday nights. Yeah, we'll get a show in next Monday. So we'll talk then.
Look forward to it, guys.
Thanks so much, Gary. Great stuff. Thank you.
Have a happy week. Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks, Gary.
Bye bye. That's Gary Larrabee, golf writer and sports historian. We're going to take a break here and come back with Mike Grenier. Good Lord Willing and the Crick Don't Rise. You're listening to MSO News Sports on this Monday night. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. We'll be back.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at moynihanlumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we're back now with Mike Grenier, and if I push this button, we should be back with Tim Kearns as well. But before I talk to you guys, I just want to mention that we'll have a preview of the D5 High School Football Super Bowl game coming up tomorrow. I'll be talking with both coaches, with North Reading High School Football Coach Ed Blum, and also with Swampscott High School Football Coach Bob Serino. And then on the next day, good Lord willing, the Crick Don't Rise, I'll be talking with Marblehead High School Football Coach Jim Rudloff, who is bringing the Magicians to the D3 title game at Gillette on Thursday. Okay, Mike, how are you?
Yes, well, I get excited over what you just said. All these Super Bowl games, Marblehead and Swampscott, and my alma mater, Central Catholic, is playing a Springfield team in a Division I game. So a lot to be excited about. And how much do those kids enjoy playing at? I mean, I've been to many Super Bowls over the years, and as much as the Thanksgiving Day games are so traditional and so great over the years, it's a whole different system now, and certainly high school football players, they love stepping foot onto the Gillette Stadium turf.
Well, Tim, how much do we like it?
Oh, Rick, you used to drool like a baby when we get up there.
You know it, and you got to go to all the breakfasts.
I went to all the meat today.
Yeah.
All right, so Mike,
that was a lot of fun, because they used to take, you know, they took the kids out of the football field, and I'd listen to you out in the field, and you're looking around, you're thinking, wow, what it must be like to have, you know, 65,000 people all up and crazy.
Yeah, it's a great place for high school football players to be on that.
All right, Mike, I wanted to bring up an introduction to you from, I don't know, a year and a half, 2 years ago, and maybe more after that, about here we are, a quarter of the way through the season, and it's another 500 season for the boys.
It's so aggravating. To see them lose the other night to a really bad team.
Mm-hmm.
And then they beat Toronto, which is just not really a good team, by a few points last night, and people get excited about that. I'm not excited about that. They're one game over 500. You're right, quarter way through the season. And right now they're like a game over 500 or five, and the toughest part of their schedule is coming up.
Yeah.
So it's kind of deceptive. They played a lot of weak teams so far. They played Cleveland a couple of times, back-to-back games. You know, they played, you know, the Toronto Raptors weren't very good. It's hard to really get excited about a team that's a game hanging around 500 when you know that they're going to go on a road trip and play some really much tougher teams in the next week and a half to 2 weeks.
I think what's frustrating... Oh, go ahead, Tim. Go ahead.
Listening on the radio, which is oftentimes a mistake, the talk of moving Jaylen Brown seems to be getting some more traction. Have you heard anything about that?
No. I mean, you read so many rumors, and you don't put... I never put much stock into it until it actually happens, because there's also talk all the time about, oh, Jason Tatum would make a centerpiece for Oklahoma City or the Clippers or whoever. You see that stuff all the time. So I really don't invest much interest or, let's say, try to read too much into those things, you know? I mean, the trades these days are hard to do because of the salaries that are involved.
You know, what frustrates me about the game, and I hope they don't do anything with Jaylen Brown, because when he's in there, he's pretty
right.
He's pretty damn good. And just when you think the Celtics have figured it out, they go back to their old habits. And, you know, the spark that, I used to love Jason Tatum, but the spark that he gives him when he plays a complete game is awesome. And by that, I mean, when he dishes out assists, when he gets back on defense, boy, that lifts everybody up. But then you fall back into the 1-2 bounce clang from, you know, 90 feet away. It's so frustrating.
Well, you know, Tim and Rick, and Tim, you've probably seen this too. He's off to by far his worst statistical season since his rookie year. He's only shooting like 38% from the floor and 31% on three-pointers. And he went 2-for-16 last night. So... 2-for-16, and he's had several of those types of games sprinkled into the first 21 games of the year. So something's off with his shooting. He's just not the deadly shooter that we've seen in previous seasons, and he gets flustered and frustrated much more easily than he used to. Not just when he misses the shot, but as we know, he's complaining and whining to the officials, LeBron style, you know, LeBron James. He's complaining and whining on every call, every non-call, and this affects your play. There's no doubt that when you miss a shot and you complain to the refs, hey, for one thing, you're not getting back on defense in time. And number two, the more, you know, what's that old saying, guys, right? The boy who cries wolf.
Mm-hmm.
There was one game I watched two or three games ago where he was complaining all night, and then when he was legitimately fouled, the refs just let it go. They let it go because they figured, hey, he's complaining on the non-calls and the close calls. Here's an obvious one. We're not going to call it.
No.
You know, it's sort of like a payback for the officials, because the other 46 minutes, he's trying to almost embarrass the officials into making calls. It doesn't work that way. The officials control the game in many ways, as you know. So he's got to get off that kick of whining and crying to officials and just concentrate on the game. And, you know, again, Marcus Smart points that out in a more level, you know, he's not calling him out, Jason Tatum, but he's saying, hey, we have to ignore the officials in play. And I think, you know, supposedly, Ime Udoka, the new coach, was going to take care of the officials and let him do all the complaining. Well, that hasn't happened, because Jason Tatum is just griping about every single call. And it's just it takes away from his ability in many ways, because he's not doing the things he's supposed to do, which is get back on defense, rebound. Now, Scalabrine, who's of course a homer, being, you know, in the Celtics booth, was talking about Jason Tatum having 10 assists in last night's game, but he shot 2-for-16. He didn't mention that. So Tatum is obviously having some problems, and that obviously is affecting their win-loss record, because Tatum is still, at least on paper, their best player.
Yeah, you know, I can't bring myself to watch them, because you turn them on, and they're trailing by 10, 12 points, and it's like, really? I mean, when am I going to find the game? Maybe with Cantor, you know, changing his last name to Frieda, maybe they'll pick something up. I don't know.
That's true. And you know what, guys? We mentioned, too, part of this recent problem has been Robin Williams, who has got off to a good start, but who has a history of missing games, has now missed the last 7 or 8 games. He's only played 14 games because of issues either related to illness and COVID or ankle or knee. It's been kind of vague about what the actual issues are, but he has missed the last 7 games, and of course, he's their primary rebounding, shot blocking weapon, and he hasn't been around. So that's why Enes Kanter, who actually has been playing pretty well, to get more playing time, because Robert Williams, again, is missing some valuable time. And, you know, they signed him to a big contract in the offseason with the idea that he could play anywhere from 30 to 35 or 36 minutes. And early in the season, he was doing that. But now he has missed the last 7 games. So, you know, obviously they have to get him healthy, and he has to demonstrate that he's available to the team more than just once or twice a week.
All right, you guys can get back to this, but I want to jump in for a minute, Mike, and just ask you about the locals. You know, Pat Connaughton and anybody else you want to talk about or mention?
You know, it's so funny. I tweeted the other day that Pat Connaughton is now averaging more points than Kemba Walker. Kemba Walker, a four-time All-Star, who I think probably, you know what, Celtics fans should at least count their blessings that Kemba Walker is no longer here, because Tom Thibodeau announced today that Kemba Walker is no longer in the rotation.
Wow.
Wow. That's quite a come down for a guy who was averaging, you know, 24, 25, 26 points a game 3 or 4 years ago. And he's not even going to be in the Knicks rotation, meaning the top 7 or 8 players, top 2 or 3 players coming off the bench. And I think, you know, Thibodeau said it's for the best of the team. That's a very, you know, obviously it's kind of an ambiguous statement, but he must feel that Kemba Walker either A, is not playing defense, B, he doesn't have the quickness anymore, C, is on the back nine of his career. All those things probably figure into his thinking, but it's kind of surprising because he's not shooting poorly. Kemba Walker's shooting around 44-45%, and actually a little over 40% on threes. So he's been pretty good statistically, but it's not all about stats. And speaking of Connaughton, meanwhile, he's actually averaging more points than Kemba. He's actually shooting better. He's shooting like nearly 50% from the floor from the Bucks, and he's averaging like a career high 12.5 points. And of course, the Bucks have won 6 straight. And you talk about locally, Rick. I texted Connaughton the other night after he had a 20-point game, and I mentioned that when he was at Fidelity House of Arlington, when he was a 7th or 8th grader, they played against the Lawrence Boys Club. And my brother-in-law happens to run the Lawrence Boys Club for the last 50 years. My brother coached that team. And Connaughton remembered every detail of an important youth league game in 8th grade. He remembered the score. He remembered Lawrence Boys Club's best player. And it kind of, when I asked him about it kind of like brought back memories of his 8th grade. And that was like, you know, 14, 15 years ago, you know?
Well,
so,
Mike,
he is very grounded, is what I guess what I'm getting at.
For us.
I'm sorry?
I said him looking back to that age is a lot closer than us looking back to that.
That's true.
Yeah, well.
It really is, right?
But no, you're right. You're right in his being grounded. And we talked with Barry Hanrahan a little earlier tonight, and he's the VP and assistant GM of the Philadelphia Flyers. He's from Gloucester, and it's the same thing. He just doesn't forget his roots. I mean, it's great to see these guys do so well and just be nice people, you know. Hey, listen.
Hey, you know what? Speaking of that, I don't know if you saw the clip. Of course, Drew Bledsoe was in the booth with Robert Kraft.
I saw that.
But I don't know if you saw the clip. He went into the locker room.
Yep.
And went right over to Mac Jones
and
shook his hand and gave him a high five. And I thought that was cool because I don't know if Mac Jones knows much about Drew Bledsoe, but being with the Patriots, he might have a little bit of history background in the last few months. But Drew Bledsoe made sure he connected with that rookie quarterback right after yesterday's 36-13 pounding of the Tennessee Titans.
It was great to see Bledsoe in the booth with Robert Kraft and Jonathan Kraft.
He's a class act.
I love Bledsoe. But listen, speaking of not in the rotation, Tim and Mike, did you see where Cam Newton got benched yesterday?
Yes. 5 for 21, 92 yards, 2 interceptions, and 64 of those 92 yards came on one pass play. So if you took away that pass play, he was 5 for 20 for 28 yards
Good
with 2
heavens.
Interceptions. Whoa. So obviously.
I'm back.
I love the fact that Matt, with the coach of the Panthers, said afterwards, he's still our quarterback. The only reason I took him out was that we had to work on the two-minute offense. They were trailing huge. They weren't working on a two-minute offense. That was just an excuse to make Cam look a little bit better. But obviously, it was a great decision by Belichick. I was kind of surprised back. Tim, were you surprised in the summertime when, out of the blue one day, Belichick announced that he was releasing Cam Newton? I mean, at that point, many media people and many national media people felt that Cam Newton was in line to be the starting quarterback again this year, and that Mac Jones would have to learn a serve an apprenticeship under Newton. Well, obviously, Belichick had seen enough. Belichick had seen enough, and he cut him.
I was not surprised by the cut at all. I was praying for the cut.
Yes, I was too.
I was praying for the cut the day that they signed him a year ago. Please
right.
don't do this to it. He hasn't played. You know, he was getting off one. Well, when he got hurt, why are you going to subject us to this? And I sent a buddy a message. You know, maybe he could get some points for clothing style. I don't know, because he couldn't get them on the football field.
Right, exactly. And Rick, I'm glad you brought that up, because that is such a, you put those numbers under a magnifying glass. You never see that 5 for 21. With 92 yards and 2 interceptions. That's almost impossible
to do in
today's game, because quarterbacks have all these spread offenses and all that, and they can pile up the numbers pretty quickly. But Cam is 0 for 2 as a starter and put up horrific numbers yesterday. And you see his post-game press conference. Just because you have Cam Newton in your locker room doesn't mean you're going to win. Well, did he hit the nail on the head there?
Yeah.
I have nothing against him personally, but as a quarterback, his best days are certainly way behind.
That's
him.
It, Mike. You know, as literary, being literal, literary, what's the word I'm looking for?
You go with that one.
Well, you know the word I'm looking for. I can't find it, old age here. But, you know, being conversant and having read a little bit, as we all three of us have, we've all read the story. Stan Fischler, for example, being inducted in the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame, he's written about the athlete who doesn't know when it's time to give it up.
Right.
And it's sad. I feel I'm very happy that Mac Jones is the QB.
Yep.
I'm happy that, things have worked out well for the Patriots. But I really feel sad for a guy like Cam Newton to just not understand what's going on.
Right.
You know, and he's making a fool of himself, and nobody likes that.
Right. And, of course, the Panthers, they brought him back thinking, okay, he still has something left in the tank. And it's starting to look obvious that what Belichick saw and what Patriots fans like Tim just mentioned a couple minutes ago, what we saw last year, you could see that Cam Newton didn't have anything left in the tank. And it became obvious to a lot of Patriots fans last year. And, you know, obviously the Panthers are hoping, because he played there before, that he's going to bring back some of the old magic. Well, it's not happening. And I think it was on one of the pregame NFL shows a week or so ago, before Cam Newton made his first few downs with the Panthers a week or so ago, Dave Wannstedt, former NFL coach, said, the Panthers made this move to sell tickets, meaning Cam Newton's name will put a few people in the seats. That may be the case, but obviously when you have a 3 or 4 game losing streak and Cam Newton's your quarterback, those people aren't going to come back to the games.
Yeah,
you know, and I was just looking on the Panther website. Now McCaffrey is gone with an ankle injury for the rest of the year. Again, he's gone for the rest of the year. And now that's his best player out 2 years in a row.
That's right. And so Cam Newton's, I guess his playing field just got narrow, right, guys? Because McCaffrey can run and catch the ball. And now Newton will have to do more himself or find receivers and catch his passes that fall into the ground, you know? And that's just not going to happen. So Cam, it's not happening for Cam, but we're much more focused on how great the Patriots have played in these last 6 weeks. It's been amazing to see the transformation and the growth of this team so quickly. And all those people who said that Belichick couldn't coach anymore, I guess they happen to eat crow, because when they play the Buffalo Bills next Monday, that becomes an extremely important game in the AFC title picture. And Patriots, they just haven't faded away. They had a bad year last year, but Belichick has gotten them right back on top, thanks to Robert Kraft signing some great people in the offseason, like Matt Judon. How great a season has he had, huh, Jim?
He is a beast. I mean, they just must wind him up in the beginning of the game before they come out of the tunnel. And he doesn't wind down until after the press conference. He is just wired.
Yep, he's been great. And I tell you what, I think a guy that I love is Hunter Henry, number 85. And, of course, Mac Jones missed him on what would have been a really easy-looking touchdown pass yesterday. But I think we need to give Mac Jones. He's completing like 70-something percent of his passes. But Hunter Henry catches anything that's near him. And he had touchdowns in, what, 5 or 6 or 7 consecutive games. And he is a tremendous threat, and I hope that they utilize him more down the stretch.
Well, you know, what I thought of refreshing, I mean, how cool is Mac Jones in the post game? He stands there. He takes responsibility. I missed him. You know, I made a bad pass. And I think he was just shocked by how open Henry was. And figured, all I got to do is lob this thing. And he just put too much air under it.
Well, it's funny, Tim. When the announcer, when that pass happened, the announcer, what was it, Ian Eagle or whatever the hell his name is, he was saying, Jones fires it, and he didn't. I'm yelling at the screen. No, he didn't. He sort of floated it.
Yeah, he did. And, you're right. And it wasn't close to Hunter Henry. And you're right. Mac Jones has been more than ready to take the blame for any little thing that goes wrong. And he's always praising the defense for picking up the slack when he's having a bad day. I mean, to me, right, Rick, you talk a lot about you love team players. Well, Mac Jones, to me, is equivalent to the John Hal in terms of being a team-oriented guy. He's like the Bill Russell type or the Halvard. I'm not talking about ability. I'm talking about his willingness to be part of the big picture, willingness to give credit to his teammates. Mac Jones is right up there with just about anybody in the NFL these days. And he kind of reminds you of those great athletes that we saw when we were young.
The thing I like... Go ahead, Tim.
When they made fun of him for when he... ran for the first down, they came, when he did that run, and he came up like a 3-yard shot, and he gave the first down signal.
Yeah.
You know, he makes fun of himself. He doesn't take himself too seriously. It's like, I know this is a game, and he said, I'm just going to be relaxed. I'm going to go out there and play. I'm going to do what they tell me to do, and we're going to see where it falls. I am so impressed with his passing. Pass after pass after pass. It's like, he's been doing this for years. This is what he was made to do.
Yeah, I tell you what, I think the area of the team that's overlooked as Mac Jones has developed is the offensive line.
Yep,
they were terrible at the beginning of the season.
Yep,
and then they got it together, right, Rick? They got it together, and since Trent Brown came back a week or so ago, 2 weeks ago, they have gotten even better. Trent Brown, when you think back when Brady won his final Super Bowl with the Rams, Trent Brown played in something like 95% of the plays that year, and he was the most ferocious and dominating offensive lineman in the NFL. Now, he signed a big contract with the Raiders, didn't work out. He comes back here. He gets injured in the Dolphins game one this year, and he misses the next 7 or 8 games. And now he's back in the lineup playing great football, and it's sort of made the offensive line even more cohesive and giving Mac Jones more time to throw.
Isaiah Wynn is playing great, too, finally. And it's funny, the first guy to greet Mac Jones on one of the plays yesterday, one of the touchdown passes, was David Andrews, the center.
Oh, yeah.
He lifted him up right in the air. He went right to him.
You've got to love him, right? He's talk about a great soldier. He's been a starter for several years now. He never complains, seldom misses a game. He's a great player and always been a tremendous teammate. So, yeah, I think Mac Jones has got a lot of high-character people that he's learning from, but he seems to be a high character person coming out of the University of Alabama. So, you know, he's tailor-made. I Belichick must be just thrilled that, you know, he's seen guys like Zach Wilson from the Jets having a terrible season and getting injured. He's seeing other rookie quarterbacks, Trevor Lawrence, of course, not with a good team in Jacksonville, struggling. But he picks Mac Jones at the number 15 spot, and he's been by far the best rookie quarterback in the league.
Oh God! Yeah, easily he's the best. He's going to be leading the rookie of the year, you know, campaign. However you want to look at it. I mean, who's had a bigger impact on his team? who's been the most consistent performer in that he's leading the league in categories.
Yep.
You know, it's absolutely crazy. He's got stats that are better than Brady's.
there's no question. Yeah, you can't. Matter of fact, I said that to my wife while watching yesterday's game. His stats as a rookie, Mac Jones' stats, are much better than Brady's rookie year. Okay, and of course, initially, Brady had much better team around him, maybe better receivers, certainly a better defense, a championship caliber defense, and that's why they won those early Super Bowls. And of course, Brady later developed into the most dominating quarterback in league history. But right now, Mac Jones is on a really good trajectory for a rookie, right? We can't say too much yet. He's got a lot of years to go, but we love the way it's trending.
Well, I like what I like, and we got to get going here, boys, in a minute. What I like is the fact that you mentioned character on the team. You got to give Belichick some credit for getting that kind of player across the board in that locker room. And plus, Tim and I have talked about this before. It harkens back to me to the early beginning of the dynasty when they had hungry players, not superstars, but just professionals who wanted to play together, took whatever it took to win, and they went out and did it. And it just this kind of reminds me of that.
Yeah, the Teddy Bruschi types, Rick. You talk about passion. Rodney Harrison.
Yeah.
Richard Seymour. You know, Juden now. Jones, certainly. You know, McCourty, a veteran who still plays like, you know, he's hungry like a rookie, you know. J.C. Jackson, who's had a great year in the defensive backfield. Yeah, they've got a lot of good, steady people, and Belichick has to be thrilled with the way this team is just not just performing, but they seem to be very together in the locker room.
Tim, last word.
Patriots.
And, you know, I guess so. And you know what? How about this guy? Max Scherzer just signed with the Mets for 3 years, $140 million. It's some absurd salary again. He's like 35, 36 years old.
Is he that age now already? Good God.
Yes, he is. Yes,
oh,
he is.
Oh, my goodness.
It was 3 years, $130 million. That's like $45 million, $43 million a year.
Well.
Oh, God.
Yep, well. As long as I get my cost of living adjustment every couple of years, I'll be okay.
Hey, Rick, if we got 1 second, I have to mention Joel Embiid. You know, you have ties to Philadelphia. He came back from after missing, 9 or 10 games because of COVID, and he was very candid in his post game. He said that at times he felt that he was not going to make it. He actually felt like he was going to die. He was so sick. And his message being, get the vaccine. He didn't come out and say that, but he was very emotional about it, and he really, you know, made it a point to say that this disease nearly took him away.
Wow.
Yeah, but you know, it'd have been better if he had come out and said, get the shot. That's
right.
Where a lot of athletes, you know, are falling short to their communities.
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers being the worst example.
And Barkley's one of the best. Barkley is criticizing everybody who doesn't get it in all professional sports. Yep, he's speaking straight from the hip. I love it.
Yeah.
All right, Mike, let's do it again next Monday.
Sounds great, Rick. Thanks, Tim. And Tim, take care this week.
I will do that, my friend. You also.
Yeah, you too. Thanks, guys.
Be well, Mike. Take care. Bye-bye. All right, that is sports writer Mike Grenier. And I don't know, Coach, we didn't talk Red Sox or Bruins. Maybe we can next week. But a fun night. And again, just the Super Bowl. Oh, I have to mention Super Bowls once again. And also that the Salem News Sports Writers podcast will be dropping tomorrow morning at around 8 o'clock. Bill Newell hosting the boys from the Salem News and also from Nick Kukru of the Gloucester Times, Phil Stacey, the executive sports editor of the News, Matt Williams, assistant sports editor, Nick Giannino from the Salem News, and along with Nick Kukru, the Gloucester Times sports editor, and so hosted by Bill Newell. And tomorrow they'll be talking about the high school Super Bowl games that are kicking off this week at Gillette, and that will be posted on our website. All that information will be there with the podcast, and of course we got Marblehead, Swampscott, and North Reading still in the mix, and you will hear tomorrow. I will post the interviews that I am having with Swampscott football coach Bob Serino and North Reading football coach Ed Blum. Hopefully, I'll be able to talk with Marblehead's Jim Rudloff tomorrow as well. All right.
I will also have Coach Jeff Hutton's wrap up of the Beverly football season that ended with a 60-28 win over Salem on Thanksgiving.
All right, look forward to that as well. Tim, thank you so much. I hope you had a great holiday and hope you continue to have good health, good luck, fair winds, and smooth, calm seas.
I hope so, too.
All right, Tim. Talk to you later.
Thanks, Rick.
Thank you. Good night.
Hey.
All right, that's Tim Kearns, our MSO special analyst, and another great guy. All great guys in this connection here. So thank you for listening. You can email us at msonewsports@gmail.com, msonewsports@gmail.com. And again, a very, very special thanks to Gloucester High School graduate Barry Hanrahan, who is the vice president and assistant general manager of the Philadelphia Flyers, for taking the time to talk with us this evening during a very busy time for him and, of course, for all of the NHL. Can't thank him enough. It was awesome. So that's it for here. On behalf of Tim Kearns, Bill Newell, and Bill Proposke, our producer and engineer, I'm Rick Moore, wishing you a very pleasant good evening.